I welcome you to another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word. If you would, join me in the book of Isaiah, chapter 65, where we will begin at verse number 8 in just a moment. We've spent the last 4 weeks strictly in the book of Isaiah, this big book of prophecy from the late 8th century B.C. This book is chock full of prophecies for that time period, for the time period leading up to the first coming of the Messiah, the expansion of the gospel and the church after that coming of the Messiah, and then all the way to the second coming of Jesus as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And beyond, as we will find in this last few verses, chapters 65 and 66 are the last chapters in this book. They are tied into the final book of the New Testament, the book of Revelation, and everything that follows after the millennial reign of Jesus Christ. So Isaiah 65, verse 8 says this, "Thus says he who is, as the new wine is found in the cluster, and they say, don't destroy it, for there is blessing in it. So I will do for my servants' sake and not destroy them all." Now, this is a reference to the judgments, plural, coming upon the ethnic Israelis over time, starting back in the time of Isaiah, because of their sin. They're going to lose not just the northern kingdom, which had already happened by the time this was written. They're going to lose the southern kingdom. They're going to go into exile. And then after they come back, they're going to go into exile again because of the rejection of the Messiah. And the new city of Jerusalem and the new temple built during the returns, they will be destroyed as well. The promise that God puts in the middle of this is, I'm still going to keep a remnant viable. Just like when there's problems with the grape crop, there's always a little bit that makes it through. Verse number 9. "I will bring forth offspring from Jacob and from Judah, possessors of my mountains. My chosen shall possess it, and my servants shall dwell there." So the promise is, when everything is finished, when everything is played out, there will be ethnic Israelis, along with the spiritual Israelis from the nations that have embraced Jesus as their Messiah. These guys will inherit the new heaven and new earth that we're going to talk about in a little bit. And the land of the promise will be where a lot of them are living in peace and prosperity, as we've seen in other passages. Sharon shall become a pasture for flocks. Sharon is the foothills, the transition zone between the coastal plain on the Mediterranean and the central highlands of Israel and Judah. And so it's going to become the perfect place to raise sheep. And the valley of Achor, which means trouble, so there's a metaphor being played on here. It's on the Jordan River side of the central highlands of Judah. And it got its name because it was the place where great trouble came upon Israel when they were first coming into the land. But already we've seen that God says, I'm going to flip the attitude and name of that place and make it not a place of trouble, but a place of peace. So here comes that again. The valley of Achor, the valley of trouble, a place for herds to lie down for my people who have sought me. So the ones that repent and come back, they're going to spend eternity with God in the new heaven, new earth. But you who forsake he who is, who forget my holy mountain, who set a table for fortune and fill cups of mixed wine for destiny. Now, this is a warning specifically, I think, to the people living in Isaiah's day. that we're playing around, maybe in private to begin with, but later it'll blow out into the public realm. They were playing around with worshiping other gods and goddesses, including the god that eventually gets the name Fortune, the god who gets the name Destiny. Verse 12, God plays on those names. I will destine you to the sword, and all of you shall bow down to the slaughter, because when I called, you did not answer. When I spoke, you did not listen, but you did what was evil in my eyes and chose what I did not delight in. So God calls, all are called, but only a few end up responding and being chosen. And so God says, and when I bring my judgment, it'll be on you because of the choice you made. Verse 13, therefore, thus says he who is God, behold, my servants shall eat, but you shall be hungry. Behold, my servants shall drink, but you shall be thirsty. Behold, my servants shall rejoice, but you shall be put to shame. Behold, my servants shall sing for gladness of heart, but you shall cry out for pain of heart and shall wail for breaking of spirit. So it's going to be judgment. Judgment for those that reject the call of God and blessings for those who respond to the call of God. Verse 15, you shall leave your name to my chosen for a curse, and he who is God will bring you or put you to death, but his servants he will call by another name. And I like that. That comes up from time to time in the book of Isaiah, which is then mentioned in the book of Revelation, that there's going to be this new name given to those who embrace Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Messiah. Apparently, in the book of Revelation, it comes with a little white stone that is given to those who overcome. Verse 16, so that he who blesses himself in the land shall bless himself by the God of truth. And he who takes an oath in the land shall swear by the God of truth, because the former troubles are forgotten and are hidden from my eyes. So now we're starting to transition to something that shows up in the book of Revelation, chapter 21. And it's actually before that. And that is that once everything is resolved, once everything is taken care of, then God's people, those who have chosen to be called by his name, they will be the eternally blessed, while the unrighteous, those that refuse to be called by the name, they shall spend eternity away from his presence. Isaiah 65, 17. For behold, I create a new heavens and a new earth, and the former things shall not be remembered or come into mind. Now that is Revelation chapter 21, which is a follow-up to the millennial reign and battle of Gog Magog, and how the unrighteous dead are resurrected and judged and sent into the lake of fire along with the devil and his angels, because that was exactly who it was made for to begin with. And then chapter 21 starts off with this line. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. So the book of Isaiah is tied in with the book of Revelation as its climax. Verse 18, back in Isaiah 65. But be glad and rejoice forever in that which I create. For behold, I create Jerusalem to be a joy and her people to be a gladness. Now it is interesting. When Jesus shows John the revelation, and John reports in chapter 21 of Revelation that I saw this new heaven and new earth, the next thing he reports is, I saw this holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And then we have the full description of this monstrous, eternal, worship city that God the Father and God the Son are the light of for eternity. So we even see that context coming out of the book of Isaiah. First mention of the new heavens and new earth, and then the reminder that Jerusalem is going to be this place of gladness. Verse 19 of Isaiah 65. I will rejoice in Jerusalem and be glad in my people. No more shall there be heard in it the sound of weeping and the cry of distress. And of course, that shows up in the book of Revelation chapter 21 as well. Verse number 4 says, He will wipe away every tear from their eye, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away. So John, probably familiar with the scroll of Isaiah and the climactic portion of the scroll of Isaiah, he ties it in to the climax of his own book. Verse 20, back in Isaiah 65. No more shall there be in it an infant who lives but a few days, or an old man who does not fill out his years. So that's tied into the idea that death is going to be done away with. Now, the next thing that is brought up, I think, is sometimes misunderstood. It says, For the young man shall die 100 years old, and the sinner 100 years old shall be accursed. Now, that's the English Standard Version, and many of the other English translations follow that sort of idea. But I think what's being pointed out into the hearts and the minds of the people in Isaiah is that if anybody died at 100 years of age, they would be thought of as a kid because they're so young at 100. Now, in the time before Revelation 21, we have the millennium. And in the millennium, there are mortals. We know that. It's mentioned there. And it's tied in with the book of Zechariah as well. Those mortals appear to be people that have not yet made their commitment one way or the other for Jesus. And so, because they're mortals, some of them will die during the millennium. And so this passage in Isaiah 65, verse 20, second half of the verse, may in fact be a reference to that time period. Because the next thing that the line says in Isaiah 65 is that anyone who dies at 100 years old is going to be counted as cursed and a sinner. So when people, the mortals, are living in the perfect paradise of the millennial kingdom, where everything is being taken care of, the food is absolutely perfect, anyone who ends up dying at 100 years is going to be thought they are a big, big sinner. The reason that they ended up dead is because they made sinful choices in a perfect millennial reign. And we do know that there will be people making those sorts of choices because the end of the millennium has a whole bunch of people join in with Satan's final attempt to overthrow the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And it doesn't last. It's like just a flash in the pan and it's gone. Verse 21. They shall build houses and inhabit them. So this is talking about the blessed people. They shall plant vineyards and eat their fruit. They shall not build in another inhabitant. They shall not plant another eat. These are things tied into the mindset of the Israelis from Scripture. The people of Isaiah's day and after amongst the Israelis would have known that the promise to those Israelis going into the promised land was that if they would live by the covenant, they would have peace and prosperity, that they would never fail to have a beautiful home, beautiful crops, beautiful produce, fruit trees galore, And they would never come under the curses of the book of Deuteronomy, that if they blow off the covenant, then other countries were going to come in and take over those properties, and they never get the chance to enjoy them. So here's the book of Isaiah wrapping everything up and saying, the blessed of God, those that have embraced the name, they will not have all these bad things happen to them from the curse. Instead, second half of verse 22, for like the days of a tree shall the days of my people be, and my chosen shall long enjoy the work of their hands. Amongst the crops, amongst the vegetation of the world of the Old and New Testaments, trees, particularly we think about the trees of Lebanon mountains, were known to live 1,000 years and more. And so when they thought of long, long, long periods of life, they connected it to the idea of a long-lived tree. They shall not labor in vain or bear children for calamity, for they shall be the offspring of the offspring of the blessed of he who is, and their descendants with them. So Isaiah promises to the people, if you will call upon the name of the Lord, you can be part of the blessed family of faith. Verse 24, before they call, I will answer. While they are yet speaking, I will hear. So God says, I will anticipate their needs from the millennium onward. And then we come to a passage I think is clearly millennial. The wolf and the lamb shall graze together. The lion shall eat straw like the ox, and the dust shall be the serpent's food. We've seen passages before that describe the peace and the prosperity of the millennium with the idea of animals that are currently natural enemies, prey and predator, will be perfectly companionable during the millennium period and after. And everything will go back to being vegetarian. That was the original design in planet Earth when all of the vegetarian diet was perfectly satisfactory. This is before the fall, before the flood. Even lions, which we think of as carnivores, were actually vegetarian. So they're going to go back to being that. Now, the dust being the serpent's food, that is a reminder of the curse in Genesis chapter 3 that was put upon Satan, that he would have his face and his belly down in the dust as the judgment against him. And they shall not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain, says he who is. So all of that promises for the new heaven and new earth. Chapter 66. Thus says he who is, heaven is my throne. The earth is my footstool. Don't think of like an ottoman. Don't think of like a place where you kind of kick your feet up on while you're watching a football game. Think of just the place where you put your feet. It's the place that the throne sits on. So in this idea, heaven is where God sits, and earth is where he puts his feet. What is the house that you would build for me? What's the place of my rest? All these things my hand has made, and so all these things came to be, declares he who is. There's going to be a growing critique from Isaiah's day onward of the Jewish superstitious trust in the temple at Jerusalem. And God reminds something that even Solomon confessed on the day that he dedicated it, that God doesn't need a building. Even a magnificent, huge structure is not sufficient for him to count as his home. Verse 2 continues, but this is the one to whom I will look, he who is humble and contrite in spirit and trembles at my word. So God's looking for a place to live in our lives. Humble and contrite people are where he wants to make his home and his throne to be placed. Then we have things that are spoken from Isaiah's context as to unrighteous people and the type of things that they engaged in. He who slaughters an ox is like one who kills a man. He who sacrifices a lamb like the one who breaks a dog's neck. He who presents a grain offering like one who offers pig's blood. He who makes a memorial offering of frankincense like one who blesses an idol. So the second thing in each one of those lines is a bad thing from the context of Judaism. In the time of Isaiah and afterwards, the people doing some of the first things in each of those lines, will their hearts will be so rotten, so off kilter with God, that they might as well be counted as doing the second thing. They have chosen their own ways, and their soul delights in their abominations. I will also choose harsh treatment for them and bring their fears upon them, because when I called, no one answered. When I spoke, they didn't listen, but they did what was evil in my eyes and chose that in which I did not delight. You'll recognize that from earlier. Hear the word of he who is, you who tremble at his word. You brothers, your brothers who hate you and cast you out for my name's sake have said, let he who is be glorified that we may see your joy. But it is they who shall be put to shame. So we've got a flipping on the head of the regular order. Instead of righteous people being in charge of the righteous worship, it's going to be unrighteous people in charge of the worship, and the righteous people will be persecuted. And that's exactly what was happening toward the end of Judah's history. The sound of uproar from the city, a sound from the temple, a sound of he who is rendering recompense to his enemies. Predictions about the destruction coming in 587. Before she was in labor, she gave birth. Before her pain came upon her, she delivered a son. Who has heard such a thing? Who's seen such things? Shall a land be born in one day? Shall a nation be brought forth in one moment? Now, I know that that's quoted in Zionist circles as a prophecy of the birth of Israel. I think it's got more to do with the idea of the birth of salvation coming first through the first coming of Jesus, and the atonement was accomplished in one day, in one moment, but also the birth of the redeemed and the righteous resurrected saints on the day of Jesus' second coming. Shall I bring to the point of birth and not cause to bring forth, says he who is? Shall I, who cause to bring forth, shut the womb, says your God? So is God going to not complete what he started? Well, of course he is. Rejoice with Jerusalem and be glad for her, all you who love her. Rejoice with her in joy, all you who mourn over her, that you may nurse and be satisfied from her consoling breast, that you may drink deeply with delight from her glorious abundance. So encouragement coming from Isaiah to those that are going through the persecutions, those that will be going through the persecutions and reading this passage, that you just need to hang in there because God will bring it all to its proper conclusion. And because you are putting your trust in him, you will be among the redeemed. Verse 12, for thus says he who is, behold, I will extend peace to her like a river, and the glory of the nations like an overflowing stream. So here is another one of the prophecies that there are going to be Gentiles involved in the glory that comes with salvation. And the peace of God's salvation is going to be flowing out of Jerusalem like a river, like a stream. That's where it started. That's where the gospel took place. And that is from where it spread out. And those of us that are Gentiles, we embraced it. We became part of this great stream of salvation history. You shall nurse, you shall be carried upon her hip and bounced upon her knees. As one whom his mother comforts, so I will comfort you. You shall be comforted in Jerusalem. So here God is portrayed as a mom. As a mom who loves her kids and who takes them up and carries them around and nurses them and then plays with them, bounces them on her knees because she wants the people that she's given birth to be blessed and comforted and satisfied. And so God is carrying us along through history and bringing new people into salvation generation after generation, and keeps moving us forward until that day when everything shall be realized with the second coming of Jesus and the resurrection of the saints, the transformation of the righteous living, and the bringing into existence the new heavens and new earth. You shall see, and your heart shall rejoice. There we go. We're going to see that with our own eyes, our new eyes, and we will be happy about it. Regardless of what might have happened to us here in this time period, we will be happy to be part of that. Your bones shall flourish like the grass. So, a little bit of a promise here about the resurrection and the transformation state. We are going to be in our new bodies and living that way for eternity. And the hand of he who is shall be known to his servants, and he shall show his indignation against his enemies. And that is exactly how the second coming is described in its various passages, both Old and New Testament. Jesus comes to save, redeem, and reward his righteous saints of all ages. And they will know him because they're going to see him just as he is. But he also is going to bring with him the judgment that comes against the enemies of truth from all ages.